had made of himself by fighting with Logan Gyre. If Durzo's apprentice had been involved with killing the prince, the king would assume he had done it with Durzo's approval, if not under his orders. Roth would not be pleased. The garlic crunched in his mouth, giving a soothing jolt to his senses. He took a breath and willed himself to relax. How had they done it? Master Tuli, damn it! Anything can go wrong, and something will. Durzo had been betrayed. There was no grand scheme. That name meant that one of the king's spies had been watching the Drakes. Probably just routine spying on a formerly powerful man. The spy had seen Durzo enter and had recognized him. Probably the spy had been one of the guards the king had tried to awe him with in the statue garden. It didn't matter.
Oh, I wish Brandt were here right now to see that look on your face, Durzo, Blint. In fact, where is Brandt?
The king asked a chamberlain.
Sire, he's in the castle now, on his way here to report. He went to the Gyre estate after investigating matters at the Jadwin estate.
Durzo's throat tightened. Aegon would have put the pieces together about Kylar. If he came in while Durzo was still here, Durzo would die. The king shrugged.
His loss.
At the word, grief and fury rippled through the little king. He seemed abruptly a different man.
You let them kill my boy, you shit!
So I'm going to kill yours. His death will come from the last hand he'd expect, and it will be arriving... Oh, any moment now.
I heard you had a little tussle with Logan last night, Count Drake said.
Kylar blinked through bleary eyes and went from dead tired to wide awake in the space of a second. He'd only slept for a few hours, and he'd had the nightmare again. Every death he saw made him dream of rats. They were seated at the breakfast table, and Kylar had a fork full of egg poised in front of his mouth. He stuffed it in to give himself a little time.
"Midwuff nuffin," he said.
This was a disaster. If Count Drake knew about the fight, he might know about the prince's death. Kylar had thought that he'd have time to pack his things and leave this morning before the Drakes got word. That he needed to leave was undeniable. He just thought he'd have a little more time.
Sera was quite upset, the Count said. She took Logan to her aunt's house near the Jadwins to have his wounds tended. She just got back a few minutes ago.
Oh. Kylar chewed more eggs mechanically. If Sera had left right after the fight, she and Count Drake didn't know about the prince yet. Apparently, Kylar's perfect streak of bad luck was breaking, but now that he knew that matters of life and death weren't threatening him, he realized that Sera coming home and telling Count Drake what had happened last night would have other implications.
I gave Logan my permission to propose to her yesterday. You knew that, didn't you? That would be the Count's gentle way of saying why the hell did you kiss my Sera and beat up my future son-in-law and your best friend after you told me you had no feelings for her.
Out of the corner of his eye, Kylar saw someone pass the window quickly, and a moment later, an old porter toddled after, looking upset. The front door banged open. A moment later, the door to the dining room slammed open with such force that the dishes on the table rattled.
"Milord,"
the porter protested. Logan stormed into the room, red-eyed but regal. He held a claymore the size of Alatira in his hand. Kylar jumped to his feet, sending his chair crashing into the wall. He was pinned in a corner. Count Drake was rising, shouting something, but he was too slow. Nothing could stop Logan now. Logan hefted the claymore. Kylar hefted a butter knife.
"I'm engaged!"
Logan shouted. He swept Kylar into a massive hug. By the time Logan released him, Kylar's heart had started beating again. Count Drake collapsed into his chair in relief.
"You big bastard," Kylar said. "Congratulations. I told you it would work, didn't I?"
"Work?"
Count Drake asked, recovering his voice. Logan plowed forward, ignoring the count.
"Well, you didn't have to hit me so hard."
"I had to convince her," Kylar said.
"You nearly widowed her.
I haven't been beaten so badly since that fight in the arena."
"Excuse me," the count said. "Work?
Convince her?"
They stopped and looked at the count guiltily.
"Well," Logan said,
"Kylar said Sierra really did love me and she only needed to be reminded, and..." He trailed off.
"Kylar, are you telling me your fight was staged? You made a fool of yourself in public, deceived my daughter, and traded her affections like a cheap trinket?"
"That's not exactly..." He couldn't match the count's stare.
"Yes, sir." "And you dragged Logan into this? Logan, who ought to know better?"
the count asked.
"Yes, sir,"
Kylar said. At least Logan was looking as pained as he felt. The count looked from one of them to the other, then broke into a grin.
"God bless you,"
he said, sweeping Kylar into a hug. After he released Kylar, Count Drake turned. There were tears in his eyes as he gripped Logan's forearms.
"And God bless you, son."
Lord General Aegon stormed into the castle, flanked by his bodyguards. The day had already been long, and the sun had only been up 3 hours. Seeing the look on his face, the men guarding doors in the castle made sure he didn't have to wait for them to open. Servants quickly disappeared out of the halls. Walking into the audience chamber, he passed a cloaked man coming out who seemed vaguely familiar, but the man had his hood up, and his face was invisible. One of the king's spies, no doubt. Aegon didn't have time for him. None of the news was good. The Gyres were the foremost family in the realm. To have their murder come on the same night the prince was killed was too much to bear. Aegon had liked the prince, but the Gyres had been his friends, and what he'd seen at their estate he wouldn't wish on his worst enemy. The pieces weren't fitting. This had all the marks of a move. A big move. A play for the throne. But why this way? Killing the prince shook everything, of course, but killing the Gyre's servants and Lady Gyre did nothing politically. Did it? As of today, his birthday, Logan Gyre became the Gyre in his father's absence. If you wanted to wipe out a family, you started with the heirs, not everyone else, and unless the news was still en route, both Gyre heirs were still alive. The prince's death wasn't only a terrible blow to the Gunder line, it was an enormous scandal. The king's affairs had been ignored, but finding the prince dead after apparently having had relations with the king's mistress would shed all sorts of unflattering light on the entire Gunder line. The assassination, if it were such, wasn't just a tragedy. It was a horror and an embarrassment. The Lord General wondered whether the horror or the embarrassment would be foremost on the king's mind. What would the queen do? He approached the throne and climbed the stairs. The usual men were there talking with the king. Aegon trusted none of them.
"Out!" he roared. "All of you! Out!"
"Excuse me," Fergan Safasti said, "but as the king's chief..."
out!"
Aegon bellowed in his face. The mage shrank and joined the men streaming out of the room. Aegon motioned to his bodyguards to step outside, too. The king didn't even look up. At length he said,
"I'm ruined, Brant. What will history say about me?"
"That you were weak, ineffectual, selfish, and immoral."
"Sire, we have more pressing matters."
"Everyone's talking about it, Brant. My son, she murdered my boy."
The king started weeping.
"So the man is capable of thinking of others. If only he'd show his humanity more often."
"Your Highness, the Duchess didn't kill your son."
"What?"
The king looked up at Aegon through bleary eyes.
"Sire, it was a wet boy."
"I don't care who actually did it, Brant. Trudanna was behind it. Trudanna and Logan Gyre."
"Logan Gyre, what are you talking about?"
"You think you're the only person I have working on this, Brant? My spies have already told me. Logan was behind it all. That bitch Trudanna just cooperated. I've already sent men to arrest him."
Aegon reeled. It couldn't be. In fact, he was sure it wasn't.
"Why would Logan do such a thing?" he asked.
"Logan was one of your son's best friends. He isn't ambitious in the least, by the gods! He just got engaged to Cyra Drake, a count's daughter."
"It didn't have anything to do with power or ambition, Brant. It was jealousy. Logan felt that my son had totally humiliated him over some trivial matter. You know how boys get. It's just like the Gyres to covet our every success. Besides, I have witnesses who heard Logan threaten him."
It was all rattling together, the pieces spinning and falling into place. Kylar Stern, the false noble, the wet boy, was a close friend of Logan's. In a fit of rage, Logan hired Kylar to kill the prince. It all fit. Except that it was Logan. Aegon knew him and didn't believe it.
"Which wet boy did they hire, Brant?"
the king asked.
"It was Kylar Stern," Aegon said.
The king snorted.
"Ha! The gods must be with me for once."
"Sire?"
"I just hired Hugh Gibbet's apprentice to go kill him. A girl, wet boy, if you can believe it. Kylar is Blint's apprentice, or was. He's probably dead by now."
"Kylar is Blint's apprentice?"
The picture that had been slowly spinning together burst apart. The king had hired Blint? Blint's apprentice wouldn't have killed his employer's son.
Would he?
The name Hugh Gibbet had been carved into the bodies at the Gyre estate. Of course, only a fool would carve his own name into such a massacre. But from his hours at the estate, Aegon was sure that all the murders had been the work of a single man. He could think of no one who could kill so many people except a wet boy, and the style certainly fit what he heard of Hugh Gibbet. He couldn't imagine Durzo Blint mutilating bodies. Blint would consider it unprofessional. Hugh Gibbet would only sign his name if he thought the authorities would never have a chance to come after him. The king said the prince's murder didn't have anything to do with power, but this was Cenaria. Everything had to do with power. If Durzo Blint's apprentice really had killed the prince, why would he have left a witness? Blint's apprentice would be as professional as Blint himself. A witness was a loose end that was easy to tie up. It was all about power. Aegon scowled.
"Has there been any word from our garrison at Screaming Winds?"
"No."
"So the Caladoran army is at least 4 days away. What are you planning to do about the festival tonight?"
"I'm not going to celebrate Midsummer's on the day after my son's death."
The Lord General had a sinking feeling.
"My king, I think perhaps you should."
"I will not host a party for my boy's murderers."
The king's eyes flashed, and he looked less like a petulant child, and more like a king than Aegon had ever seen.
"I have to do something," the king said. "Everyone will think..."
He went on, but Aegon ignored him. "Everyone will think." That was the key. What will everyone think? The prince was dead, killed in a shameful way, either by the king's mistress or by a wet boy. The beloved Gyres were dead or imprisoned. Aegon suspected now that an assassin had probably made his way into Screaming Winds and killed Regnus as well. It wouldn't make sense to leave him alive, not when someone was going to such pains to set plans in motion. Everyone will think that the king ordered his own son killed in a jealous rage, and that to get back at his unfaithful mistress, he framed her. With the right rumors, everyone's bewilderment over why the Gyres had been murdered could be turned too. People would connect all the murders. But how? The Gyres were next in line for the throne after the Gunders, though the family had never challenged the king. The king, weak and jealous, could be portrayed as paranoid all too easily, and the Gyres were far more respected than the Gunders. Lord Gyre's faithful service would be seen as being rewarded with treachery and murder. Logan, the new Lord Gyre, had been seized by the king, and the king's natural inclination would be to keep him in prison. But Logan was known to be absolutely moral, without ambitions. For the gods' sakes, he was betrothed to a lowly drake. So if the king were to die, who would succeed him? The vastly popular Logan Gyre would be in prison, where he could easily be killed. The king's son was dead. His eldest daughter was 15, the others even younger, too young to hold the throne in a nation at war. His wife, Nalia, might try to take the throne, but the king had feared her and marginalized her as much as he could, and she seemed content to stay out of politics. The Jadwins were finished after their part in the scandal. That left the kingdom's two other duchies, either Duke Grayson or Duke Wesseros. The queen's father could make a grab for power. But the queen's brother, Havrin, was out of the country, so he seemed an unlikely usurper. Duke Grayson was feeble. Any of a dozen lesser families might try for the throne. But no one could hold it. It would be a civil war in which the four main parties were equally matched. Civil war of a kind far worse than the civil war that Regnus had feared 10 years ago when he allowed Aelin to take the throne. Where did that leave the other players he'd been worried about so much recently? Where did the Sakage and Kalador fit? If the price were right, Kalador could buy the Sakage's help. And then, all the pieces snapped together for him at once. Lord General Aegon swore loudly. He cursed so rarely that the king stopped in mid-sentence. Aelin looked at Aegon's face, and whatever he read there made him afraid.
"What is it? What is it, Brandt?"
All these years, he and the king had been so focused on Kalador that they'd never thought of a threat coming from within. Kalador was taking out the entire line of succession and manipulating the king into helping. Once all the heirs who were both legitimate and powerful were eliminated, Kalador would kill the king. They would act quickly, before he could establish a new line of succession, before he could consolidate power or mend the relationships he was about to break. Then they could watch the chaos and march when they pleased.
"Your Highness, you must listen. This is a prelude to a coup. We may have only days. If it starts,
all our preparations against Kalador will be useless, and you'll be the first to die." The king's face was painted with fear. "I'm listening," he said.
Chapter 44. After congratulating Logan a few more times, Kylar had excused himself to let the young duke speak with his father-in-law-to-be. Sira was in the back of the house getting changed, and they had agreed that she probably shouldn't see Logan and Kylar being friendly until after the wedding. "I'll understand if I'm not invited," Kylar had said. "But if you ever do tell her, I'll expect an apology. Congratulations." He climbed up the stairs to his room, pitched his tunic in a corner, and stared into the looking glass. "And congratulations to you. Your master is going to kill you, and all the women in your life hate you." Next to the mirror, he noticed a bundle of letters bound together with a ribbon. He picked it up. Scrawled on a scrap of paper in Blint's hand was a note. "Since you've crossed the line, I guess there's no reason to hide these from you anymore." "What?" Kylar untied the ribbon and read the first letter. It had been written by a child, all big letters and disconnected thoughts. "Thank you so much. I love it here. You are great. It is my birthday today. I love you, Eline." An adult had written below that. "Sorry, Count Drake. She overheard us talking about her lord and benefactor. She's been wanting to write this letter since we started teaching her how to write. She wouldn't let go of the idea once she got a hold of it. Tell us if we shouldn't let her write no more. Humbly yours, Gare Cromwell." Kylar was spellbound. There was a letter for each year, each getting longer, the handwriting better. He felt like he was watching Eline grow up before his eyes. She, too, had changed her name, but there was no denial in her of what she had been, no divorce from her previous weakness and vulnerability.
"When she was 15, she wrote,
"Paul asked if I get mad because my face got cut up. He said it's not fair. I said it's not fair that I got out of the Warrens, while so many others never did. Look at everything I've got. And it's all because of you."
Kylar had to flip through the letters, just skimming them. He was living on borrowed time. Sooner or later, word would arrive about the prince's death. And damn, the girl could write a lot. He flipped to the last letter. It was dated just a few days ago.
"You don't know what you've done for me. I've told you about all the ways your money has saved my family, especially when my adoptive father died. But you've done more than that. Just knowing that somewhere out there, there's a young lord who cares about me. Me, a slave-born girl with a scarred face, has made all the difference. You've made me feel special.
Paul proposed to me last week." Kylar had a sudden impulse to find this Paul and kick his ass. "I would have said yes, even though I hate his temper and other things, too.
The point is, just that you're out there, caring about me, makes me believe that I'm worth more than a lousy marriage to the first man who will propose to a scarred girl. It gives me faith that God has something better for me."
"Oh, she's a god person. Great. So that was how she knew the Drakes."
"Thank you. And sorry about my last letter. I'm totally mortified by what I wrote. Please, ignore everything I said."
"Huh?"
Kylar turned back to the last letter and couldn't help grinning. Eline had been deep in the throes of full-blown 16-year-old girl romanticism.
"I think I'm in love with you. In fact, I'm sure of it. Last year, when I went to Count Drake's to drop off my letter, Mother finally lets me do a few things by myself. I think I saw you. Maybe it wasn't you. But it could have been you. There's a boy there, a young lord like you.
He's so handsome, and they totally love him. I mean, you can just tell how much everyone thinks of him, even Count Drake. I mean, I know he's not really you because he's not rich like you are. Because his family is poor, he lives with the Drakes. Kylar's breath caught. Eline had seen him. She had seen him a year ago, and she thought he was handsome. She thought he was handsome? But what does money matter when you have love? There were... No. Yes, there were tear splotches on the page. Well, Kylar had grown up around three girls. It didn't totally surprise him. He just wondered when Eline had started crying. So, since you're the strong, silent type and you never write back to my letters, I've decided I'm going to call you Kylar. And this next line she crossed out. I suppose you might be fat and ugly and have a big nose and... I am so sorry. I should start over, but Mother says I already use too much paper as it is. I'm sorry. I am a total brat. But can't you write back to me even once? Have Count Drake give it to me next year when I drop off my letter. Paul says I'm not infatuated with a man. I'm infatuated with a bag of money. Eline didn't know anything about him, but hey, she'd been barely 16, and Kylar still wanted to kick Paul's ass. But I'm not, and it's not infatuation. I love you, Kylar. A chill washed through him at those words. How he wanted to hear those words. How he wanted to hear them from her. And here they were. Here they were in knots and knots of his duplicity. She said all those words to him, not thinking he was he, not knowing Count Drake gave her letters to Durzo, not knowing Kylar really was her young benefactor, not knowing Kylar was really Azoth, not knowing Kylar was a killer, not knowing that, for that one time she'd seen him, that he had seen her hundreds of times twice every week, whenever he could make it, in the market off Sidlin Way. He watched her grow up in that market, told himself a thousand times that next week he wouldn't go and try to catch a glimpse of her, and always succumbed. He'd watched from afar, and come to have his own infatuation, hadn't he? He'd told himself that she was just forbidden fruit, that that was all that appealed to him about her. He'd told himself he just wanted to see that she was well. When that didn't work, he told himself that it would pass. He was 20 years old now, and he was still waiting for it to pass. His sudden hope, she'd been infatuated with him, hit reality like Gandhian porcelain hitting the floor. The delicate tracery of thin possibilities smashed. Now the stricken look on her face yesterday made more sense. The revelations that could have been so poignant for her. I am Kylar, and Azoth, and your young lord, and I love you too, had hit her like a sledgehammer instead. I am Kylar, and Azoth, and your young lord, and a murderer. Help me. Give me your trust, so I can betray it. There wasn't time for self-pity, and Kylar had already indulged in too much of it. He'd left behind a witness who knew he was a wet boy, and who knew he was Kylar Stern, and who believed him guilty of stealing the Globe of Edges, if not worse. So he'd quite possibly thrown away an identity he'd spent 10 years building for a little ball that he hadn't even kept. The buckets of hot water that the maid usually put in his room in the morning were empty. For some reason, that set him off. He felt his eyes getting hot and tears threatening. It was so ridiculous he almost laughed. Those empty buckets were the smallest inconvenience, but it was like the gods, or Drake's one god, wanted to crush him. Everything that could go wrong had. Master Blint was going to kill him. The woman he was trading his life to save hated him. Even Cyra Drake, who had been unsure about whether she loved him or Logan just last night, now hated him. The worst part of it was that it was all his fault. Everything that had gone wrong because of decisions he had made. Well, at least the empty buckets weren't his fault. Kylar grabbed the buckets and walked down the hall. He ran into the maid coming up the stairs with two buckets full of steaming water. "Hello," he said. He didn't recognize her, but she was prettier than most of the girls Mistress Bronwyn hired.
"Hello. I'm so sorry I'm late. It's my first day, and I don't know where to find everything. I'm really sorry," she said.
She squeezed past him, and Kylar couldn't help but notice her large breasts gliding across his bare chest. She disappeared into his room, and he followed. "I can take those if you..."
"You aren't mad, are you?" she asked. "Please don't tell Count Drake or Mistress Bronwyn that I was late. I don't think she likes me, and if I mess up on my first day, I'm sure she'll throw me out. And I need this job ever so bad, sir."
She had set down the buckets, and she was wringing her hands.
"Whoa," Kylar said. "Relax. I'm not mad. I'm Kylar."
He extended a hand and a smile. She seemed to warm instantly. She smiled and took his hand. Her eyes flicked briefly over his bare chest and stomach. Briefly, but appreciatively.
"Hello. I'm Viridiana."
The porter showed a handsome Ladeshian man into the den. Logan had stepped out to grab something to eat from the kitchen, so Count Drake was alone.
"Sir," the porter said, "he insisted that he must deliver a message in person."
"Very well, thank you," Count Drake said.
The Ladeshian had such presence that it seemed odd for him to be acting as a messenger. He looked rather like a courtier, or a bard. He was holding something in his hand that took all Count Drake's attention away from the man. It was an arrow. Its entire length, including steel head and feathers, had been painted a glossy red, the color of fresh blood.
As soon as the porter stepped out, the man said, "Good morning, my lord. I wish our meeting could be under different circumstances, but I'm afraid my message is quite important. This comes from Durzo Blint," he said. "If he's still alive, give this to the boy, and tell him to meet me for dinner at the Tipsy Tart."
The man bowed and presented the red arrow to the count. From the doorway, Logan laughed.
"If he's still alive? I guess one of Kylar's friends saw me coming here this morning, huh?"
Count Drake chuckled.
"I'm sure you scared everyone who saw you."
He turned to the messenger.
"I'll give it to him.
Thank you."
"My lord,"
the Ladeshian said, turning to Logan, "we mourn your loss." He bowed again and walked out. Logan shook his head.
Was that a bachelor joke?
"I don't know. I visited Ladesh once and never did understand their humor. Maybe I should take this upstairs."
Here I thought we were about to have the big father-son dialectic about marital intimacies.
Count Drake smiled.
"You put it so primly."
"Sira's pretty prim," Logan said.
"Believe me, there's nothing prim about marital intimacies, Logan."
Count Drake looked at the arrow in his hand and put it aside.
"Well, the first thing you have to understand about lovemaking is..."
Viridiana rubbed her shoulder and said, "It's so nice to see someone nice. I thought this place was going to be awful to work at after how mean Mistress Bronwyn was. You don't mind, do you?"
"No, not at all," Kylar said, not really sure what he was not minding, but sure that he wasn't supposed to.
As if it were the most natural thing in the world, Viridiana untied the laces of her bodice, which Kylar had already noticed was unusually tight.
Oh, that's better, she said, drawing a deep breath. She closed and locked the door, and then walked over to the buckets, peeling off her bodice and dropping it. Kylar said. Then Viridiana bent over to pick up the water buckets again. She must have had 6 feet of cleavage because Kylar was totally lost in it. His mouth opened, but no words came out. It was with an unseemly amount of effort that he pulled his eyes up.
Viridiana was watching him, and even as his face got hot, he saw that she was anything but displeased. With a deft twist, she released her tightly bound hair, and it cascaded around her face in long curls.
Are you ready for your bath, my lord?
No. I mean...
You want to bathe after?
She said, walking forward. She reached behind her back and started opening buttons.
After?
Kylar stepped back, but his resistance was crumbling.
Why not? What the hell have I been waiting for? For Aline?
Viridiana filled his vision. Full lips, gorgeous hair that he could practically feel already in his fingertips, on his chest. Those breasts, those hips. And she wanted him. It would be sex, just sex, not lovemaking. Not some grand expression of romance and commitment, just passion. Simpler. More like Mama Kay's version of things. Less like Count Drake's version. But damn, her body was more persuasive than a room full of scholars. His calves hit his bed, and he almost fell. I don't really feel very comf... Her hand came up to his chest, and then she slammed it into him. He was falling back as her other hand came up from behind her dress in a glimmering metallic arc. By the time his back hit the bed, she was straddling him, her knees pinning his arms to his sides, one hand grabbing his hair, the other pressing the knife to his neck.
Comfortable?
She asked, finishing his sentence. She wasn't kidding with the knife. It was pressed against the side of his neck, just at the point where a little pressure would break the skin, and it was poised over an artery. As his lungs filled with gasps of air, he had to try not to move his neck.
Ah, shit, he said. You're Hugh Gibbet's apprentice, Vi, Viridiana. Vi. How'd I miss it?
She smiled joylessly.
Who are you working for? The prince was my debtor.
Seriously? How embarrassing. To be taken in by another wet boy.
Or are you a wet girl? Not the way you're hoping.
She ground her hips against him, and he blushed.
She pinched his cheek. You aren't too ugly, you know. It'll be a shame to kill you.
The shame's all mine, I assure you.
Don't feel bad, she said. Part of my talent is a glamour. It's to your credit you weren't actually drooling.
You mean those are an illusion?
Move your hands and die, she said. The body's real.
Thanks.
I should say thank you, but this knife at my throat is muting my appreciation some.
If you're trying for charm, you're way out of this. You need practice.
Who are you working for?
You're working for the king, Kylar said. Aren't you?
Backbone, she said. I like that.
Wetting myself would be awfully messy for both of us, Kylar said.
She chuckled, and he smiled as charmingly as he could.
Was that better?
Better. I'll give you one for effort. I took this job for the king. He was a little peeved that you killed his son, so I take his money. But I take my orders from Roth.
Last chance now.
She pressed the knife a little further into his skin, and he had to lean his head as far to the side as he could to keep it from cutting him.
Maybe you can appreciate my dilemma, Kylar said, straining his neck.
If I don't answer, you'll kill me painfully, but it will take a while. If I do answer, you'll kill me quickly, but soon. Or you can try to string this out for as long as you can and hope someone saves you. You're smart. I suppose you'd have to be. We've all been curious why Blint would choose an apprentice without the talent. I guess smart wins it.
You all? You've been taking bets on me?
Wait,
they say I don't have the talent?
Like they say, there are no secrets worth knowing in the Sakage, Vi said. So you aren't going to tell me who you were working for, are you? Probably just another one sent by Roth. When he wants a job done, he makes sure it gets done. There's even a rumor he got Lady Jadwin to do it, but I know a wet boy's work when I see it.
You're kind of chatty, aren't you? Kylar said.
If he had a hand free, he would have slapped himself. Note, when attempting to buy time, do not criticize the prolixity of your captor. Her beautiful face turned ugly for half a second, and Kylar saw the Hugh gibbet in her. Then she smiled, but Hugh didn't leave her eyes.
In the next life, she said, work on that charm.
The next feeling would be the glide of a knife, the flesh of his neck parting. Warmth. Kylar's muscles bunched with need and desperation. There was a knock on the door.
Kylar,
the Count said. Vi flinched and turned her head.
Kylar threw his head to the side and bucked, trying to throw her off. Or that's what he told his body to do. Instead, he felt energy pouring through him like lightning on a leash. A brief euphoria, power swelling through him. Well-being as if he'd been sick his entire life and now felt health for the first time. It was the talent that Durzo had always said he had. And now, it was his.
Vi flew into the air, but she held on to Kylar's hair, and one of her legs got tangled with one of his. So instead of flying off him, she flew up, and then crashed back down on top of him. She tried to slash him, but both of his hands were up now, and he caught both of her arms and rolled. They fell off the bed, and he landed on her. She grunted and raised a knee between his legs. It was like the sun exploding in his pants. He groaned, and it was all he could do not to let go of her hands as she rolled on top of him.
Kylar,
the Count shouted through the door.
Do you have a lady in there?
I wouldn't call her a lady. Kylar's stones hurt so bad he could barely move, much less fight.
Help!
You're pathetic, she said. He could only grunt. She launched herself off of him. He struggled to his feet as the door burst open, but he was too slow. She was already throwing her knife at Count Drake. The Count threw himself to the side, and the knife sailed past him harmlessly. Instantly, he had a throwing knife in his own hand, but he hesitated. Vi saw his hand raised and leaped for the window. Kylar grabbed the knife from the Count's hand and threw it as Vi disappeared through the window. He thought he saw it sink into her shoulder. He grabbed the sword that was secreted under his bed, but when he looked out the window, she was gone. The Count looked shaken. He was holding a red arrow in his other hand.
I hesitated, he said.
From anyone else, it would have been a concession of defeat. But Count Drake sounded victorious.
After all these years, I wondered. But it's true. I really have changed. Thank you, God.
Kylar looked at him strangely. What are you talking about?
Kylar, we have to talk.
Chapter 45.
I'll be dead in a day or two. So please pay attention, Jarl,
Mama Kay said. Jarl hesitated for a moment,
and then sipped the utai she'd poured him.
Damn, but the boy can be cold.
But then, that was why she was having this talk with him, rather than with anyone else. Tomorrow or the next day, Kylar or Durzo will come here and kill me, she said, because I sent Kylar to kill a man he thought was Hugh Gibbet, but was actually Durzo disguised as Hugh. Whichever one lived through their fight now knows that I lied, and that I betrayed them both. I know that you were once friends with Kylar, Jarl.
I still am.
Fine. I wasn't going to ask you to avenge me. I'm ready for justice. Life from here is just a series of disappointments anyway. Was that pity in the boy's eyes? She thought it was, but she didn't care. He'd understand if he lived to be this old. What can I do to help you, Mama Kay? I don't want you to help me. Things are happening fast, Jarl, maybe too fast. Roth's making a play at becoming Shinga. I suspect we'll be hearing the sad news that Pon Drayton is dead any time now.
You're not going to warn him? You're just going to let Roth kill him?
Two reasons, Jarl. Knowing either of them could cost you your life. Are you ready to be a player on this stage? He scowled, actually thought about it, and then nodded. First, I'm going to let Pon Drayton die because I've been compromised. Roth blackmailed me into betraying Durzo and Kylar. I won't share how. I've been humiliated enough. All that matters is that Roth owns me. I can't oppose him in any way that he might detect or suspect, or it will cost me something I value more than my life. So I'm going to die. I want you to replace me. You want me to take your seat on the Nine? She smiled into her utai. I was never just the mistress of pleasures, Jarl. I've been the Shinga for 19 years. She had some satisfaction in the way her unflappable protege's eyes widened. He sank back in his chair.
Gods, he said.
That explains a few things. She laughed, and for what felt like the first time in years, she really felt like laughing. If exposing your throat always felt like this, she thought she understood for the first time why Durzo had loved the danger in his work. It made you appreciate being alive, standing this close to death.
Tell me how it works, he said.
It was what she would have said in his place. She would have accepted what the Shinga had said about her death, and immediately started looking for how it would affect her, rather than expressing any sorrow that the Shinga would be dead. Or, perhaps, in Jarl's place, she would have given some moo of sorrow that her mistress would die, but it would have been a lie. Jarl gave no such pretense, and maybe she could respect him for that. He'd learned her lessons well. But it still hurt.
I'm sorry,
he said. He sounded like he really meant it. Maybe he did. Or maybe he was just sorry that she was sinking into such softness that at the approach of her death, she, who had taught him how to manipulate his own pities and loves, should want him to do that toward her. She couldn't tell. Jarl was what she had made him to be. It was worse than looking in a mirror. Everyone in the Sakage knows who their boss is. The smarter ones know who their representative on the Nine is. Of course, the Shinga's identity is an open secret, which means not a secret at all. Put that together, and if you pool a few thieves and whores, you can figure out the entire power structure of the Sakage. But that's been fine for the last 14 years because things have been so stable. Was that stability because of your leadership or just luck? Jarl asked.
My leadership, she said honestly.
I had the last king killed and put Aeline on the throne, so we haven't had pressure from above, and I've handled all the pressure from within. But the normal state of any Sakage is upheaval, Jarl. Thieves and murderers and cut-purses and whores don't tend to stay united. Assassinations are common. During your life it's been far more peaceful than ever. The first 5 years I was Shinga, we lost 8 Shingas. 6 were assassinations from outside. 2 I had to have killed myself because they tried to take my power. Only 2 seats on the 9 remain unchanged. For the last 14 years, Pondraden has been able to indulge his vices freely, so long as he attended the meetings and kept his mouth shut and didn't step out of line. I never expected him to last so long. So, only the 9 know who's really the Shinga? And the Wet Boys. But they take a magically binding oath of service. The system does have its drawbacks. Pon is nearly as rich as I am, just from kickbacks and bribes, and every new member of the 9 finds out that he's been sucking the wrong toes for however long it took to climb the ranks. It irritates some of them mightily, but it also keeps some people off the 9 who don't belong there. Best of all, it's kept me alive and in power. What does Roth mean to this?
Roth has just joined the 9. He isn't in on the secret. That's why Pon will die sometime today or tomorrow. Roth thinks killing him will make him Shinga. But that actually exposes the greatest flaw in all my secrecy. If only 8 people know who the real Shinga is, Roth only has to convince those 8 that he is the Shinga now.
If the rest of the 9 are so afraid of him, how do I take his power? Jarl asked. Mama Kay smiled.
Exactly that.
You take it. I won't leave you defenseless, of course. She reached into her desk and pulled out a small book.
My spies.
I hope I don't need to tell you that the longer it is before you burn this book, the less your life is worth. He took the book. I'll memorize it immediately. She leaned back in her chair.
He's in a strong position, Jarl. People are terrified of him.
So that's everything? Jarl asked.
You'll forgive me if I don't tell you where all my riches are stored. An old woman has to protect herself, just in case I live through this. Besides, if I die, you'll have plenty of time to find it all.
Can I ask your advice? He asked. She nodded.
I followed the men you asked about, Jarl said.
Mama Kay nodded. She didn't prod Jarl with questions. They'd worked together for long enough that she knew he would tell her everything.
They were definitely witches. They attempted an ambush on Regnus Gyre with a small retinue north of the city. Most of his men were wiped out, and all of them would have been, except that he had a mage with him.
Mama Kay raised an eyebrow. I was viewing them from a distance, but Regnus and the mage quarreled afterward and rode separate directions. My guess was that Lord Gyre didn't know his man was a mage.
This mage defeated 3 witches?
Everything spectacular came from the witches. But when the smoke cleared, and I mean that literally, he was the only one standing. The man fought with his wits. He stalled 2 of the witches until Lord Gyre's soldiers could cut them down. He made a horse trample the 3rd. I don't understand magic, so maybe there was more I didn't see, but that was what it looked like.
Go on.
Lord Gyre had only 1 man left after he and the mage quarreled. They took a circuitous route through the city and arrived at his manse after midnight. You've heard what was there?
28 dead.
Hugh Gibbet was given free rein.
Roth's orders?
Jarl asked. She nodded.
Unfortunately, the wet boy's oath does have a number of loopholes. It was horrific. Anyway, Lord Gyre persuaded the men who came to arrest him to join him instead, and they are now hiding at a cousin's house, trying to quietly gather as much support as they can. The mage is Sethi, first name Solon. I couldn't find anything else yet. As of half an hour ago, he was staying at the White Crane.
You never disappoint, Jarl.
He was about to ask a question when there was a knock at the door. A maid came in and handed a slip of paper to Mama Kay. She handed it to Jarl.
The cipher's in the front of your book.
In a minute, he had decoded.
Pondraden's dead.
Jarl looked up at her.
What do I do now?
That, my apprentice, she said, is your problem.
Kylar, I want to talk about your future.
This should be brief.
Count Drake pulled his pince-nez from his vest pocket and didn't put them on. He just waved them as he spoke.
I've got a proposal for you, Kylar. I've been thinking about this a lot, and Kylar, you're not cut out to be a wet boy. No, listen to me. I want to give you a way out, son. Kylar, I want you to marry Elena.
Sir?
I know it seems abrupt, but I want you to think about it.
Sir, she's only 15.
Oh, I don't mean now. What I propose is that, well, Kylar, that you get betrothed. Elena's been infatuated with you for years, and I propose that we give it a couple of years to see if anything comes of it, while you're learning my business.
I'm not sure I understand, sir. In fact, I'm sure I don't understand.
The Count slapped his pince-nez against his hand.
Kylar, I want you to... I want to give the chance to leave the life you're in. Learn my business and take it over for yourself someday. I've spoken with the Queen, and with her permission, I found out that we could transfer my title to you. You'd be a count, Kylar. It's nothing special, I know, but it would make you legitimate. You could be what you've been pretending all these years.
Kylar's mouth dropped open. Transfer your title? What do you mean, transfer it?
Oh, Kylar, the title hasn't done me any good anyway. Bah! I don't have any sons to pass it on to anyway. You need it, and I don't. Anyway, I want to do this, even if the whole betrothal with Elena doesn't appeal with you. This would give you time, Kylar. Time to figure out what you want to do with your life. It cuts you free. Free of them.
Free. Out of the Sakage. It was the most noble gesture Kylar had ever heard of. And after last night, it was too late.
Kylar looked at the floor and nodded.
It won't work, sir. I'm sorry. Believe me, You've been more than kind to me, far kinder than I deserve. But I don't think that...
He nodded toward the picnic Logan and Cyril were sharing.
...is for me.
I know you're planning on leaving, Kylar.
That was the Count, right to it.
Yes, sir, Kylar said.
Soon?
I meant to be gone already.
Then maybe the god led me to speak with you now. Durzo told you not to listen to my preaching, I suppose.
Count Drake was looking out the window, but his voice was aggrieved. He said if I believed you, it'd get me killed.
A fair enough statement, I suppose.
Count Drake said. He turned and faced Kylar.
He used to work for me, you know.
Excuse me?
Durzo?
That brought a smile.
Before he was a wet boy?
Kylar could